right, so I, of course, have a lot of questions for you about cyber traps. And I guess to start with, you know, what do you mean by cyber traps?
Well, the concept of cyber traps is one that I've been working with now for the last 6 or 7 years. And the basic idea is that it refers to an unexpected outcome that stems from the use or the misuse of digital devices. So it's really kind of the unforeseen problems that we create for ourselves when we use technology and we don't think about what we're doing, or the technology ends up causing us to do something we didn't really intend to do. You know, a good example of that would be the people who are complaining in their workplace about their job or about their boss, and they accidentally send the email to the entire office instead of just to the person they're planning to talk to. Or some of the unintended consequences, and this is particularly true for kids, of taking photos or being tagged in a photo without realizing that that's happening, or without necessarily realizing how far photos can spread way beyond what they actually intend.
Okay. So it sounds like this is a problem for all ages, or when do you think it starts for people?
Well, there's different layers of this, honestly. I've written 3 cyber traps books so far, and I'm actually working on a couple of others as we speak. But there's a one book called Cyber Traps for Expecting Moms and Dads that I wrote about 18 months ago that really looks at some of the quote-unquote cyber traps that can arise really from the first moments of pregnancy in terms of what is the impact of cell phones on pregnancy, or, you know, Wi-Fi, or a whole bunch of other things that I talk about. And then I work my way through the pregnancy in the early days of infancy. And there's a lot about the impact of technology that we're only just beginning to understand. And then, of course, given the fact that kids are using cell phones at younger and younger ages, and obviously tablets and other devices, we're starting to see kids get into trouble with these devices just because they have the capability to do so without us necessarily realizing how powerful a device we've given them. And that actually was the basis of my book, Cyber Traps for the Young, which is really the first one that got me started on this. And then the second book that I did in between those two was Cyber Traps for Educators. And that's one of the reasons that I'm here in Alaska and obviously going to the Petersburg School District, is to really help teachers appreciate the risks that they face both inside the classroom and outside of it.
Yeah, you say layers, and it does seem to be such a complicated issue because it's almost like adults are already playing catch up to the youth, because when adults were young, there was no internet. So they're just learning about this as an adult, and they've never gone through it as a child, but they're trying to keep control of it for their own children.
Right. It's a hugely complicated issue for parents and for teachers. And you're exactly right. I mean, you know, I'm 55. The internet really wasn't around until, you know, I was in my, well, gosh, was at 30s, basically. You know, so it was such a dramatic change to see in the mid-90s. And then when you look at the fact that smartphones, for all intents and purposes, are really only 11 years old. I mean, think about how our society has changed in just over a decade. It's absolutely staggering. So I have a lot of sympathy and empathy, honestly, for parents who are grappling with this. And that's part of the work that I'm trying to do, is to, number one, give parents more information, but also give them the confidence to approach these issues. And, you know, my big takeaway when we do the community event next week is going to be that, you know, parents have experience. They have life experience. They have hopefully some wisdom that they can give their children to help them guide how they use these devices. And above all, providing context and offering communication with the kids on a daily basis makes a huge difference.
Can we kind of go over a few bullet points for maybe people listening who aren't able to attend for whatever reason? You know, what have you found? You've presented all over the country to, you know, thousands of parents. What have you found is, you know, the main problem that parents are having, and what do you tell them?
Well, the main problem parents are having, honestly, is saying no. And that's, you know, that's been an ongoing challenge, I think, in various areas for the last, you know, couple of decades. And, you know, the thing is that these devices are designed, honestly, to be attractive to kids, to be very compelling. And so there's an enormous amount of peer pressure among kids, you know, with respect to which devices are you using, or do you have the latest device, and so forth. And what I urge parents to think about is, number one, to form a unit, you know, a parental unit if they can, if that's an option, with the kids to provide a united front and help the kids to understand that having the latest device is not necessarily in their best interest. And so a big part of the message is, can we slow down kids getting access to these devices? Can we give kids more time to interact with the world without staring at a screen? And I'm increasingly convinced, for a large number of both psychological and physical reasons, that that's incredibly important, that we do a real disservice to our kids if we let them substitute, you know, a virtual experience behind a screen with actual physical, you know, movement around the world. So, you know, that's the big one right there. And then the second thing I think that is super important is to really engage in ongoing conversations with kids of every age about how they're using their devices. What are they doing with them? Who are they interacting with? What kinds of things are they seeing online? Because the reality is that kids will always be more advanced than parents are inclined to give them credit. And so parents need to do their best to try to stay up to speed with that and help kids understand the impact of what they're seeing. You know, the average age at which kids are using these devices is now under a year, and we're starting to see kids getting online earlier and earlier because it just becomes easier to do. And so what that means, among other things, is that kids are being exposed to things that are way above their maturity level. And it puts, you know, it puts a burden on parents to help provide understanding and context for what kids are seeing.
Well, I feel like you're talking directly to me as a parent of a 9-year-old.
Well, and you're, and yes, Angela, absolutely, you are absolutely in the sweet spot of this eye-opening experience for children. And, you know, without knowing the particulars of what kinds of devices your child has access to, you know, the takeaway from my interaction with parents is that they're always seeing more than you might think, you know, in terms of friends they visit, or, you know, kid brings a device to school or what have you. So having these conversations on a regular basis without, you know, obviously being oppressive or threatening, but just kind of, you know, as part of your family back and forth is hugely important.
What about parental controls? I know some devices have those for parents to put into place, but is that a sufficient way
to keep kids safe? Well, let's put it this way. It's not a guarantee. I think parents need to be very realistic about the limitations of the software and the cleverness of kids. Those two forces interact oftentimes to undercut the best laid plans of parents. But I will say that parents, if they're concerned about these issues, and I think everybody should think about them, they should use any tool that's available. Amazon, for instance, for younger kids has, I think it's the Kindle Fire, that allows really good parental controls in terms of the kinds of content they view, the amount of time they can spend looking at things. Most of the cell phone companies are providing better controls for parents in terms of filters and again, you know, limitations on time. And then lastly, there are some very good new routers coming out. I think Google actually has a new Wi-Fi system for the home that offers device-by-device limitations that parents can set. I think this is all really wonderful stuff. And as long as parents are realistic about it, that's a great step. The other thing I would strongly urge people to keep in mind is that I think it does a disservice to use hidden surveillance tools. I think if you're going to do this, it's only appropriate to do it if you're going to have a conversation with the kids about what is in place and why it's being done. I think that we run the risk of doing sort of a broader damage to our society if we kind of encourage kids or suggest to kids that hidden surveillance is appropriate, because I don't necessarily think that it is. The other thing I'll add, by the way, is that one of the things I'm going to make available to the parents in Petersburg, and anybody who's listening to you can do this, is I have a free ebook called Raising Cyber Ethical Kids, which talks about the value of creating a family acceptable use policy for using devices, and it gives a whole range of conversation starters and bullet points for parents to think about in talking to their kids about what level of usage is appropriate and what restrictions there should be. If you do a Google search, you should be able to find the download. But if anybody has any trouble finding it, they can go to my website, fredericklane.com, and email me, and I'll be happy to send them a copy.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of that great information. I know exactly what you mean when you say children being on a device and then not being physically present in the world, because I know what's super popular right now among the kids is just watching other children play online.
Yes. I mean, these are called run-throughs or walk-throughs on YouTube, and they're staggeringly popular. I mean, kids setting up logo toys or doing Fortnite or doing various video games and so forth. And, you know, not only are they incredibly popular for kids to watch, but the most popular kids creating those videos are actually earning a huge amount of money from YouTube advertising and so forth, which raises a whole host of other interesting issues, which, you know, we can talk about at some point if you'd like. But I will say, yes, I mean, the idea that there's this virtual experience that is substituting for your own hands-on interaction with the world is really disturbing. And, you know, I have been looking at the issues of tactile experience and empathy and so forth. And so you have this mixture of psychological and physical effects that we're only just beginning to appreciate. I mean, again, if we're talking about smartphones being 11 years old, the high-end tablets that little kids are using now are even more recent than that. And so we're conducting this very broad, unregulated experiment on our kids in terms of what these devices will do to their development, to their ability to interact in the real world, their ability to focus on tasks. All of these things are being called into question by these incredibly addictive devices. And I think that you know, the phrase I've come up with to help parents think about this is least feasible technology, in the sense that the rule of thumb for whether or not kids should have access to devices is that they should have access to the least feasible tool to accomplish whatever task they're hoping to accomplish. So, you know, for instance, if you want your kid to be able to get in touch with you because you're scheduling after school, well, they probably don't need the latest smartphone or even a hand-me-down smartphone to do that. There are plenty of phones out there that simply allow phone calls. And that's totally reasonable from a parental point of view, that you want to be able to get in touch with your kid. But do you want to give your middle school child the ability to take photos and publish them on a worldwide platform? And it seems to me that really raises some legitimate questions. You know, it's hard. I absolutely get it. My kids came along a little bit after the kind of, a little bit before the explosion of devices. Smartphones really weren't introduced until they were just getting to the end of high school. So in terms of my own parental experience, we didn't really have to grapple with this. But, you know, there was the internet and there was YouTube and stuff like that. And I know how compelling these can be for kids. And I respect the challenge. But I will say that the parents, I think, who have had the most success are the ones who, number one, have modeled good behavior. They're not on devices all the time themselves. And then the second thing is have had, you know, really long-running conversations with kids about the appropriate role of these devices in the child's life.